Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. I'm here with Ollie Preston. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. Can you give the listeners a little bit of an insight to sort of who you are and what you do?
I am the founder and technical director of RPM Technic, which I set up in 2001 in a one-car lockup about a mile from where we're sat today.
Nice. Right, so let's dig into a little bit of the journey, or maybe a little outline of RPM Technic. What do you sort of deal with? I guess this probably has changed slightly over time.
Yeah, well, it's Porsche only. We don't have anything else come through here. Service, maintenance, restoration, upgrades, engine rebuilds, gearbox rebuilds, remapping. If it's a two-door petrol Porsche model, we're all over it.
Not a four.
Not four. Definitely not a diesel.
Definitely not a diesel. Okay, so take me back. Wind me back to the sort of beginning of this journey. Were you always sort of into cars, tinkering with cars and stuff as a younger person?
I was always into taking things apart and putting them back together again.
Mm.
So be it my bike, toys that broke, whatever. My dad had Porsches as a kid. So, you know, that was like hero status.
Nice.
Whatever car your dad's got.
Yeah. So what sort of thing was that at the time?
Well, the first car I remember him having was actually an Alfa Romeo. But interesting, that's what my brother does, his Alphas, but we'll gloss over that. He had a 924, like a silver 924,
nice.
Back in, this must be 1983.
Yeah.
Which he rolled into a ditch. And I remember going to the scrapyard with him as a little kid. And I said, why is the windscreen hanging out, Dad? He goes, because that's how I had to get out of it. So, okay. And he was just collecting his stuff out of the car. It's quite funny. And then he bought a red 924, which he didn't have for that long. And then he got his first 911, which was a 77, like 27 Lux. Nice. Pretty, yeah. Back then, yeah, it was a cool car.
That was super cool. So then, you know, how did we get to the point where you started having a lockup? What were you doing in that middle time?
I left school when I was 16. I went on work experience at a Porsche garage and called Mac Tech Tuning, and I went for work experience there for a week, then I went back to school, so that was good. And then when I left school, I went there and did an apprenticeship, started there in 1993.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, started working with the guys there, all of which we work together here now, which is quite
nice.
Cool. So it's like the man who trained me, he now works here.
That's really cool. At that point in time, what sort of, you know, to your apprenticeship period, what sort of things were you like doing and learning? How did that kind of
work? So we had a rolling road like back then. Mm-hmm. So we used to do a lot of tuning stuff. It was mainly Porsche stuff, but we also did Golf GTIs, Peugeot 205G, you know, all the hot hatches that everybody now wants.
Yeah.
So we were doing Fiat Uno turbos, like doing chips and remaps on them. But also general maintenance of SCs, 3.2 Carreras, 944s, stuff like that.
Mm.
And then gradually that business grew and we just focused on doing Porsches. I worked there from 93 till 99. I left in 99 to go and do restoration with a guy called Tony Outridge, who passed very recently, bless him, rest in peace. And I worked with him doing restoration on early car 27 RSs and stuff like that in 99. And then I took a year out and went travelling around the world.
Nice.
Lived out of a rucksack. Thought, oh, I'm done with cars for a bit. Came back and I thought, oh, I reckon I could do this myself.
Mm.
Reckon I could do this quite well. So I got a one car lockup and I started doing the stuff for Golf GTIs, but mainly focusing on Porsches, but obviously you don't just open the doors and say, hey, I did Porsches in a one car lockup on a farm. So I had to start building it, you know, 944 turbos, 964s, all the sort of lower end stuff that's now a fortune. Just maintenance on those. And then
at that point in time when you sort of started, how did you get those like first customers?
I used to put flyers on people's windscreens.
Nice.
Yeah, old school. I used to print flyers up and I'd go out and drive around station car parks and just a sort of radius of where I was.
Yeah.
And I'd offer free collection delivery, so I'd meet people at station car parks in the mornings.
Yeah.
Take their cars, do the work on them, and then meet them there at the end of the day.
And did you sort of go to someone and go, your car looks like it's falling apart, I could fix this, or just...
No, it was just purely, it was flyer
servicing.
Yeah, servicing and maintenance. And it sort of started from that. And I'd also bought a 964 that needed an engine rebuild. Mm. So I rebuilt that, so I'd have something else going on in the background and just slowly ticking over with that. And then asked my landlord if I could put a ramp in there, but he'd have to raise the roof because I was doing it on jacks and axle stands and honestly. And then he said, well, do you want to move into this? And it was his old, it was an old cow shed, and it was 30 metres long, six metres wide. And I was like, oh my God. The rent on the one car lockup was £30 a week, and this was going to be 100. And I'm like, man, this is, I'm all in now.
Yeah.
I went, yeah, I'll do it. So I got a ramp, and then I employed someone to work with me. And yeah, it just went from there really. And then that would have been after about probably 2002, 2003. I met Darren, who's my business partner and the commercial director. Mm. He had a 944 turbo, which I flyer dropped. and he came in and did a load of work with him. Sort of got his 944 turbo sorted out. And then he sort of got on really well. Same sort of outlook on cars, looking after them, doing it properly. And he's got an engineering background, so he sort of came on board and we sort of grew it from there. And then a little while after that, we met Greg. He used to maintain, he had a 964 he used to look after. But we were still in the cow shed at this point, so it wasn't shiny enough for him. He wasn't ready to come over. We got him in the end, though.
Has that been a sort of theme throughout of the people you've met along the way, sort of being part of the bigger scheme of just general life? Like, you must have met a lot of, you must meet a lot of really cool, interesting people working on cars like this. And I think people that are into Porsches are probably slightly more interesting than some other people, but that's maybe not. That's just my spin on it, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, what's important here is like the people who work here. A lot of us have known each other since before this business existed or before, you know. So I've got the guy who trained me, the guy who was in between me and the guy who trained me, who was the sort of main mechanic there, and the apprentice who came in after me. So we're all working here together now. Then I've got, so Darren brought Ian on board, who came from G-Force. I was in Blue Coral, the old racer, ran the GT1s and 935s and stuff. So he's raced. Okay. We got Danny, who's here. He's raced at Le Mans, pickup motorsport. So he's done his motorsport background and Porsche background there. Dan, who's been here for 16 years, he came here on his moped as an apprentice. He's been here ever since. It's like a bit of a big family, really.
Mm.
My wife works here. My sister-in-law works here.
Is that, presumably part of it, getting people to stay as well and getting people in at the bottom as well? Has that been, a real learning experience? How have you managed to sort of deal with that over the years of staffing and whatever?
Nobody wants to have a high turnover of staff because you want the continuity of the work and know the people you're working with. Mm. But look after them, really. If you look after your staff, they'll look after your clients and then the business will work.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do this on my own at all. That's why surround yourself with good people. In fact, get people who are better than you to do stuff. And then then you're learning from them as well, right? So the technical knowledge within this building is just amazing across everybody, what they've done. And because they all pull together and be like, someone's got a problem with something, they can all get their heads together on it and we always work it out.
Yeah. And then, so what's the stage been to expanding to? Your site now, have you gradually grown over the years here, or did you move into this big site?
So this cow shed I moved into, we then got another ramp, so I had two ramps in a row. And then we had a single poster at a precarious angle this side. And we tried to just get the best equipment we could buy, tooling. So we got all the right stuff together, really good team of people, and it was bursting at the seams.
Yeah.
We were looking for 2 years before we found this.
Yeah.
And we came down here and we only came down to look at one unit. And by the time we started negotiating for one unit and then we ended up going for 1.5 units and in the end we left for 2 units. From going from the back of a farm.
Yeah.
Suddenly, this was real. This was we were properly all in now. None of this 30 to 100 quid. It was proper rental agreements.
And, yeah.
Everything was, suddenly it was properly serious. But we felt we were ready for that because we built the reputation. We'd built up the equipment, the team. We were just bursting at the seams. So this came along at perfect time.
Yeah.
Well, probably a little bit late, actually. But
I imagine for a lot of people, it's very easy to sort of get fixated. And I know I kind of do it, but everyone probably does it. You get fixated on, okay, but we could have the next space and make it all super glitzy and glam and whatever. But actually, if you can hold on for a bit longer and just wait and just be a bit bursting at the seams for a while, because as soon as you expand, if you can't fill that, the costs, everything. I might have this flash new place, but if we don't fill it, then...
Well, since we've been here, we expanded the showroom next door where you came in. That's now the reception and entrance area because we started getting such a high flow of client collection drop-offs. Everybody's packed into a tiny reception. So we're we need more inside car space. So we took that and we've also got a projects unit out the back. So we've got a standalone unit for air-cooled and project restoration work. So that air cooled and water cooled can't ever meet, of course. It's
are they dividers?
They are in separate buildings, but it's just the way it's worked out. There isn't a divide internally. It's just how it's worked.
Yeah. And you guys work, as you said before, anything with a Porsche badge that's got two doors and you put petrol in pretty much. So how early would you go?
We do a bit of pre-impact stuff, but it's not really our specialist field. I did restoration on it for a bit and there is some experience here, but I would say our strongest suit is sort of probably late 70s, SCs, 32s, 964s, 993s on that area. Because Chris he's done all the Bosch diagnostic training courses. We've got some of the equipment we've got is the old Bosch system testers. We've got a Bosch ABS tester that's specific for 964 Carrera 4s. Okay. Their system is totally unique to that car.
Yeah.
So I think there were three in the country or something when they were actually available.
Yeah.
So we've got some really amazing equipment for testing these vehicles and he loves the diagnostic stuff. He was a Bosch master tech back in the day. Right. So he's just in his element. You see some of this stuff, it looks like something out of a 70s sci-fi movie with buttons and stuff on it. So that's, and then But more recently, a lot more of the focus has been on the GT cars. We've always been big fans of the GT3, but with the racing stuff the guys have done and some of the background of the more recent members of staff has been GT3 stuff. And then, because there's a tie-up with Manti as well, we do a lot of stuff with them.
How did that come about?
So I met Michael Grassel probably 8-9 years ago at KW. I went to KW in Germany to a training course, and I met him there. He was driver and sales in KW in Germany, and just got on well with him. He took me out. They were developing it was a 991 kit at the time, so he took me out in that. It's like, wow, this guy can pedal. And just sort of stay in touch, really. And then he went to Manti. We had a client with a GT3 RS 991.1, wanted to do some track upgrades. And I said, well, we've got to go to Manti. So message Michael, can we? Yeah, no problem, Ollie. Nice to hear from you. How are you doing? Are you still in the cow shed?
Yeah.
We'd moved. Got somewhere else now. Can we? Yeah, of course, no probs. Buy some bits. And so we started doing a few little bits and pieces with them. And then we had a client, really nice client, who's also become a friend as well. He had always had Manti stuff, and he had a 991.2 GT3 RS, and he said, I want to get the Manti kit done. And I said, well, can we do it for you? And he said, yeah, if Manti will support you in it, then yeah. So I opened that conversation with Michael about us building the 991.2 GT3 RS that is Porsche approved, warranted. And he's like, yeah, maybe we can do something. And we were back and forth. And then he said, yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to fly over from Germany. We'll send the techs over with the equipment, because we had to buy the equipment to set the cars up off. We'll come over, we'll train you, build the car, and then you can build them from there on your own. So I was like, wow, that's good.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, and I've also got a GT2 RS as well that needs doing. So we ended up, yeah. So we got the 2 and the 3 RS over the first builds outside of Germany, apart from Australia. Australia, Manti, I've been to Australia and done it there.
Yeah.
So we were the first one. And this was apparently one of the things with Brexit meant that we could have that. It was one of the good things, Brexit. It meant that with Manti coming to the UK, it's not more difficult for them to work here. So it's easy for them to train us and let us get on with doing it, dealing with the UK ones. So whereas the rest of the Europe, I think they were going to dealers building the cars.
Yeah. Because I remember, I know someone who, I wonder, because I remember the stage, someone I know was having his GT2 RS, who was going to get the Manti kit. And it was like early GT2 RS, maybe it was the same car, I don't know. Mazin.
No, Mazin got his done in...
I feel like he got his...
I think his was... like the first, first UK car, or yeah, I mean, he was way ahead of the curve.
Super early.
And like that, the process of, obviously they've developed all of their parts and whatnot and sorted it all out. For you guys to fit everything, do you need any particularly crazy kit? Pretty much it's all just, it's like wheels and whatnot and alignment and blah, blah.
It's the geometry setup equipment that is, that's the magic part of it. So the Manti equipment is a geometry equipment that bolts onto the wheel hubs.
Yeah.
It sits on weight scales, so you do ride height, corner weight, geometry all at the same time.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah.
So, and it doesn't just weigh all four corners. It pretty much puts a cross through the car, so you can see the balance of the car. So, I mean, in theory, it's like you could balance it on a pin.
Yeah.
It's kind of the logic of it, so you can see the weight. Although the corner weights will be not totally even, but the split from the car, you'll get 50-50 weight distribution on it. And yeah, it's quite cool. It's very cool.
Yeah, because I remember, because GT, they've been doing stuff for ages, haven't they?
Manti, I left Manti, won the Carrera Cup, didn't he, back in the 964 days, and then started his company from there. And I mean, they're now 51% owned by Porsche AG anyway.
Yeah.
So they are Porsche's skunk works, if you like. It's where they do all the development. So when they're taking a car on to take it to the next stage, you've got, you know, Porsche Weissach will sort of hand over all the, well, this is where we've got to.
Yeah.
This is all the information. You know, it's not like they're taking it up and having to work it out.
Nice.
They're just picking the baton up and taking it to the next stage.
That is a really interesting point about it. When people look at it, aftermarket tuning, you know, in inverted commas, you go, right, so someone like Porsche has spent God knows how much developing this car, and then a man in a shed has gone, I reckon I can do it better. And you're like, okay, yeah, like, there's also budget and whatever and all the specific usage of things, but it's an interesting one to look at. And then you get, so something like the Manta, they're fully linked in.
They are. I mean, they are. I mean, obviously, when so let's take the GT3 is built as a production car, they have budget constraints still. Yes, they have a huge budget to develop it, but it's still got to be built within a certain budget. So, you know, right, this is the budget for suspension, for example, the shocks and springs you can use, or your preferred partners, that's who we're working with. But when Manti get it, kind of, okay, do what you want.
Yeah.
And they can take that to the next level. And it's obviously a time constraint as well. If you could develop a car, you have 25 years to develop it. Yeah, but they've got, hence the next generation of stuff comes out. But with Manti picking it up in between and taking it, and going to your man in shed thing, there's obviously stuff that men in sheds do very, very well that, you know, exhaust systems are a prime example where, you know, European legislation stops people from, stops manufacturers from doing certain things to cars. So, you know, the man in the shed can come along and make a beautiful exhaust system that will give power, give increased torque and power and sound great.
And tuning. And tuning, I think, is... It's such a wide range of stuff, but like kind of engine mapping and stuff like that. I had a really good conversation with Ian Litchfield about this, and I didn't realize how many, let's just say like day one of engine tuning, it was like four parameters that you could mess with, like as a sort of thought comes. And now it's like 20,000 little bits and pieces and whatever, and it gets quite into it. One of the things, so you've worked on and with 964s for ever, basically. That car, with the 964s we're seeing now, turned into God knows, whatever they are, Singer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How have they changed in terms of, you bought a car back there, things you can do, how has that sort of progressed over the years? Because, like, the guy that we know, my friend and your customer, and probably friend, he's got a 964.
Yeah.
And I know that's slowly getting further and further down the line of things you can change, how extreme, et cetera, et cetera. With something like that, how has it changed over time and things you can do now that you couldn't do, even think of?
The biggest difference on those is the price of them.
Yeah.
Because of Singer using them as their base car.
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody's gone, 964 is a good car to mod. And that's driven the prices crazy, right? But apart from that, I mean, people always used to do, back in the day, it was always make them more RS. Like, so you put the bigger brakes on, you know, different uprights, suspension, put a set of pole position seats in it, take a load of weight out of it, and you had a really good little track car.
Yes.
But as suspension technology's come on, you know, you can put much better suspension on them now. The KW kits, we fit a lot of those to them. It's a really good recipe for that particular chassis. Works really well. But it's all the, you know, it's one of the things of those was stalling. When you put a lightweight clutch and flywheel on it, people used to go, man, it stalls all the time. And you could map it. You put a chip in the Motronic ECU, but it's now like they're putting throttle bodies on there with drive-by-wire throttle control and Motec standalone systems. And, you know, the great thing with the 964 is the way the engine goes in is you can literally, it's got a multi-plug under the seat that you can unplug, and then you can unplug the ECU and you can take the whole engine and loom out. So that is ready to then go in. You can put that in another car quite easy, and you've got like a couple of power leads and some gauge feeds, and it just plugs in. It's really simple. Not everything's not tied into everything else like modern stuff is. So that's why they were so good to play around with. That's why people put 964 engines in 3.2 Carreras and stuff like that. Because it's easy to do. And then the other end of it, you've got Singer doing like their DLS thing, which just looks... I mean, that's just the That is a mic drop moment, isn't it, for anybody modifying 96 floors? Well, that's okay. You're done. Aren't you? You're never going to top that.
Yeah.
It's just, they've just done everything so well. And you look at it and think, yeah, I can't fault that car. Well done. I'm going to bow out, sir. It just done it. I mean, love to have a go in one.
I'd love to have a go in one of those. And I think I've over the years, tried a few different versions from different people of whether it's 964s or 903s and stuff. I've driven some of the Paul Stevens cars, driven a Theon design. You met those guys, Adam? I've driven a Singer, not had much of a go in one, but a bit of a cruising one. And then I've got my backdated SC. Those are kind of my like, reference points. And I realised quite early on, I think it was after driving one of the Paul Stevens cars, it's like, there are differences between these, your million pound car, and I think the DLS is probably, this is just, that's like another level. Yeah. But in terms of like having a really nice interior and having panels that fit amazingly and all that sort of stuff, it's like aesthetic things that look really nice and probably reduce a little bit of weight. A really well set up base car that's got good suspension, good engine, that's pretty, and like bolted together well, gives you a lot of the experience of one that you could easily spend another 100 grand. Then it gets to like, yeah, how much do you want to ramp it up? But like a 964 or something, it changes quite a lot. But I feel like you do get an idea of where these things are. They're still, it doesn't matter how much money you spend on it, it's still a 964.
Yeah. Unless it's a DLS.
This is DLS.
It's not really a 964 anymore, is it? But yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's, I guess the thing is as well, is some people will come in and they want the look. So the backdate look is already expensive to do on a 964.
It's so expensive to do now.
It's so expensive to do because all the parts are so expensive and they're, you know, they're not quite as good as they were originally. So they, you know, quite a lot of panels need reworking, even from genuine stuff from Porsche. Yeah. And, you know, then people make their own panels and you get loads of these small industries going off and making, well, they make upon it. And you're like, why don't we all get together and all make one really perfect one? Yeah. We can all share it. So it's a bit with 964. So you've got the backdate element. Then you've got, I mean, let's face it, they're, what are they, 30 plus years old now?
Yeah.
You know, when they come out, the first ones are sort of 88, 89. So talking 34 years old. So they need restoring anyway.
You need a full restoration.
So
that's it.
And it's full restoration. Then you're going to do engine rebuild and then you want to modify it. So, and then it's a gearbox rebuild and it's, oh, well, I want to put a diff in it. And then it's suspension, brake. I want to do upgrades. It's got more power, so it's better brakes. So it's all RS brakes. And then, so you're taking stuff off that's still good or could be refurbed, but replacing it with new for better. And then it comes to the interior stuff. And obviously what people are doing with interiors now, I think, again, Singer set the benchmark on that when they
bought
the classic.
Absolutely smashed it with the classic when that came out.
And it was like, okay, because everybody was doing pretty much the same thing up until that point. They were going for RS interiors with pole positions because it just worked.
Yeah.
Nobody had thought outside the box. And then Rob Dickinson did what he did. He's like, well, that's cool. That's, and how many people have tried to copy those seats?
I know.
Yeah.
I couldn't, that was not a problem, but like an interesting stage of, they released that car and you saw the interior. And then I remember when the DLS came out and I saw that interior, I was like, the game has changed.
Yeah.
And you look, and one of the ones that's, unfortunately, they're not there in the same ones for that, Roof. I love Roof as a brand. I love the cars. I like what they're doing, especially like the new cars, like the CTR anniversary and stuff like that. And the engineering and the fact that it's all like a carbon tub and whatever. But you look at the interiors and you're like, guys, you're charging a lot of money for these cars. And the interior just looks like a 964 covered in Alcantara. Maybe a bit more than that. But like,
probably a bit harsh,
but
I guess it,
we've got this new reference point,
but their stuff looks a lot more original.
It does.
So your guy in your Roof has got a car that underneath is light years ahead of what it originally was, but it looks pretty much like a standard 964. So you've got a probably different marketplace for those cars.
I think with
they're very well engineered, aren't they? I mean, Roof, everybody thinks back the Yellow Bird video around the ring.
I saw one the other day. Did you? It was the first time I've ever seen one.
What colour was it?
It was yellow.
Was it? No, they weren't all yellow. I've seen a green one. But they're so, they look good now. I mean, if you could buy that car now, you would, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And like, that to me as a car is actually so much more interesting. For me as someone who likes Porsche and then a bit of history of Porsche and also then the video and all that stuff.
You could almost say Roof did back then with that car what Singer did.
Yeah.
You know, it was just they just turned everything on its head and went, this is what you can do. And it was like, wow.
Okay, the Roof UK guys. Actually, I'd like to split that comment about the interiors. The older cars based on, let's say, 964s, or no, whatever they're based on. They're literally every year they're based on something like that. They're doing kind of like OEM, but mental engineering in terms of changing engines and whatever.
Yeah.
With their new cars, which is not a Porsche anymore, it's their own chassis, own everything. And they're like, you know, a million plus or whatever. I think they need to adjust the interiors and whatever. But I saw a BTR2 the other day that the Roof UK guys have just had restored. And that was based on a, what was it? 964, I think. And when they came out, that car was the first turbocharged. Was it not? Or was it earlier than that? Basically, you couldn't get a turbo when Roof came out with the turbo. Yeah. So the standard Carrera was like whatever it was.
So is it narrow bodied, that one, or is it a wide body car?
It's like not super. Yeah, I think it's like a turbo body esque. So slightly wider. But yeah, when they came out, I think I'm just going to make some numbers up. But let's just say you could get 300 horsepower out of the standard car, and this was like 450.
Yeah.
And there was no Porsche turbo. So for like a year or whatever, the Roof was like so much faster than anything else. Same with the Yellow Bird when that came out.
Yeah.
It was like 500 or something, like 220 miles an hour, something ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that was the quickest car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At the time, quickest production car.
Super cool things. So
normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Over the years, you guys have done your own sort of modified bits on various cars, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done, I mean, across all range, really. We did a 964 backdate for a guy who wanted a Singer, but he wanted a narrow-bodied Singer.
Yeah.
And I think that was the only thing, to my mind, that Singham, if they'd offered a narrow-bodied version of that car.
Yeah.
Because wide bodies tend to go in and out of fashion.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There was a point when a wide body 911 was a bit. I mean, I remember being in a wide body. Well, it was a 930 Turbo Targa, Guards Red, and this must have been early 2000s, and people were laughing at me. I was sat around about it, and I remember trying to sell it. I couldn't get like $8,000 for it. It was, nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
And then you know now they're really cool again. They're retro cool.
Yeah.
But then I think they weren't old enough to be that cool.
Yeah.
But sorry, so we did a narrow-bodied car for him, backed out on a 964, which was which we learned a lot doing that, about how you have to change the floor platform and stuff. So you can see how much, that's when you start doing that and you see how much engineering Singer put into developing that.
Yes.
And then we obviously did our CSR program, which started off with a bottle. We bought a really high mileage Boxster S, and it was around the time that Cayman R came out.
Yeah.
And we did a KW kit on it. We just put braided brake lines on it. We just went through the car sort of top to bottom and just rebushed all the suspension, just made it a really tight, nice Boxster, lightweight clutch and flywheel, you know, just some sort of the recipe that Porsche pretty much done and Manti do on their kits now. Yeah. We did it on a Boxster back then, called it a CSR and went out and did a load of track days in it. And that was really well received, especially with the price point it was. You know, these cars were cheap, so you could do a lot of those mods too. And then the next one we did was the 997. Did a 997, we got a car in that had bore scoring, so we did an engine rebuild and it's a tired suspension. So we just applied the same recipe and we went through and did that to the 997. And then we did a 996. And the thing at that point was you had the GT cars, which have always been fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody aspires to have. But then you had a lot of good, cheap 996, 997s that you could buy, stage build, do these upgrades and mods to, and get a car that was pretty close. I mean, it's never going to have the engine in it, but you could get it handling well, stopping well, and it would be a respectable track car that you could also use on the road, and it had back seats.
Yeah.
So it ticked a lot of boxes for people, and we built over 40 of those in total for people now. And what we learned during that development was, you know, we still apply it. Sometimes we just do a suspension kit for someone with a 996 or a 997. You know, we had a lot of stuff developed and made when we did days like flywheels.
Yeah, because I remember seeing those, would have been reading in a magazine or something, when it would be like a 997 CSR or something. And seeing them, you know, get reviewed and whatnot and be like, oh yeah, that's quite cool. And I think at that point in time, I was into the like big, wide, big wings, like all that sort of stuff. But looking back, those were the kind of like narrow body, under the radar, but perform.
It was all, the ducktail was the sort of signature piece we did for them. And we still sell... I mean, ducktails is probably what we sell the most of from the back of it. We send them all over the world. Yeah, they're always on order. The guys can't make them quick enough for us. But, you know, we'd take GT3 styling keys from them. And what was really nice about when we bought the CSRs out is people thought they were factory cars. And that was, on the CSR, I've not heard of them. Right, cool. But because we use a lot of genuine Porsche parts, you know, GT3 bumpers, side skirts. Yeah. You know, we did our own sort of centre exit exhaust that was a bit cup car-esque and a few stuff like that, but nothing too out there.
And what were you doing to the engines at that point?
We'd done the engine mods. We didn't really go for capacity increase because everybody knows they're not the strongest of engines. Yeah. But we'd different rods. We'd lighten and balance the bottom end, different rods. Used to flow the heads. So we kind of apply, again, following the Porsche recipe, the X51 pack.
Right.
So they had different manifolds, different inlet, flow the heads and get a bit more power, but they always felt a lot more punchy.
Right.
And yeah, that worked well. You know, I think the biggest mods we ever did was the what we called the Evo, which is the one we painted Merlin purple.
Mm.
And that really tanked on that car. It was a quick car. Because we did all the engine mods to it, but you know, it wasn't a GT3, we weren't pretending it was a GT3.
Yeah.
It was just looked really cool. Merlin purple is a good colour as well.
Yeah, it's a good colour. It's funny, like, definitely the narrow. It's like my SC is like slightly wide, because they're not like, it's got a slightly wider front, slightly wider rear, but like, I'm really liking narrow cars again.
I think it's also a bit of a British thing, isn't it? We're not quite as shouty as...
We are, yeah.
We're less shouty, so we like to just turn up, do stuff properly and go home without making a big fuss about it.
And ideally look as understated as possible in the process.
Yeah.
We love an underdog in this country, don't we?
We do.
I think mine's led slightly by this sort of anti-grip. I went down a lot of like, my like 997.
Yeah.
Like that on a set of cup twos in the dry. It's just so much grip. Just so much grip.
Mm-hmm.
And then makes it a little bit spiky. On track, it's fine. But like, if you want to have a bit of a play on the road, you're being quite aggressive. Aggressive.
You're going quite fast.
Oh, yeah, even just like out of a junction or whatever.
Yeah.
You're really being quite brutal on the car. And I really like, I'm like, well, I kind of want to be able to just like faff around a little bit without having to give it the big one. So then I'm like, right, okay, let's start going down this smaller tires, narrower cars, even like less power but just less weight kind of route.
That's the thing, is that you can have a much slower car but be having a lot more fun.
Yeah,
you see on track days all the time, you know, you've got the guy turns up in a, you know, have an old air-cooled 3.2 that he spent loads of time and effort developing it.
Yeah.
And he goes out, and he might not be the fastest guy out there, but he's probably one of the biggest smiles on his face.
Yes.
Because he's like, you know, that's what's fun, is driving cars flat out.
Oh, absolutely. Isn't
it? And if you've got something so fast that you can't drive it flat out and get the most out of it,
yes,
you know, you want to be this corner speed, isn't it? And chucking them around.
Exactly. Like, that's, I've had fun. So much fun in, like front wheel drive stuff, like I've done some C1 racing in like in that like a track prepped Citroen C1. You're so on it.
How much speed can you keep carrying?
Yeah. Like it only does about 110 miles an hour, but you just carry that into every corner.
Yeah.
And like if it's not going to work, you just scrub it off sideways. Like it doesn't. You're having the most fun that you possibly can.
You're not going to. I mean, if you go off in that, it's not going to look like a light aircraft has come down, is it? Like if you go off in a GT2 RS, there's going to be debris for quite some
time. That is it. And then we've got like the cars now, the road cars coming out of Porsche are mental. Like the things you've got downstairs, you look down and you've got like GT3 RS and like 901 GT3 RS, then like GT2 RS, and then the current gen, well, 991.2s with MR kits.
Yeah.
And you look at them, you're like, oh, this is such a serious bit of kit now for a track day.
Yeah.
Do most people who get MR upgrades, they're doing it for a track? Or
they all track them, but they're perfectly usable on the road. I mean, what that conversion does is the car's so much more compliant.
Mm.
Even the low speed use on the road, it's so much more compliant. I mean, when we did the green car, the first one we did, the owner said to me, Ollie, use the car before you do it, the conversion, and then, you know, use it after as well, so you get a real good back-to-back feel, and so much easier to drive faster. And that's what they do so well, is they're, you know, I'm no racing driver, but you can get a lot more from the car, drive it a lot faster and feel safer in it than when it's a standard car. Yeah. And they're not bad standard, don't get me wrong, but you can
They're still better than everything else.
Yeah, exactly. You can probably get like 90% out of the car without having to be a racing driver.
Yeah.
And that's what's really cool about it. So, but to get the next 10%, you've got to be like properly good. I mean, I've sat next to Tim Harvey in his one. I've been around Nürburgring and a lot of other circuits, and what it does, it's amazing. You know, he just passed everyone else, so he stood still. Nick Tandy took me round in the green one when we first built it. And he's like, I just can't believe this car. It just feels like a racing car.
Yeah.
Lars Kern took me around a Nürburgring in a GT3 RS MR.
Sweet.
And they're just like, what these guys can put these cars into. And you think, it's really, actually, you think you can drive, and then you sit next to someone like that.
Yeah. But they are professionals and they are bloody good at it.
But they're all really nice guys as well. There's no massive egos with them. They're good.
It's annoying, that, isn't it?
They're great fun to be around. You know, they're just a good laugh, and that's also good, because some racing drivers can be a bit, you know, and some of them aren't into cars either, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, just it's a tool, and they do their job.
They do their job,
and they go home. But yeah, they're all into cars as well, so it's good.
It's super cool. I definitely picked that sort of up around feedback of people driving GT2 RS MR and stuff like that. Of the main thing is it's an easier car to drive.
Yeah.
It's just easier, and therefore you go faster. And it can, it's more, maybe more capable and whatever, but like, it's easier.
Yeah.
And if a car's easy to drive, you're not scared of it.
And it's not, doesn't make it easy without taking anything away from it.
Yeah.
Kind of, you're still having a great time in it, and it's, you know, you're going really, really fast.
Yeah, so it's not like, very fast, yes.
It's not like easy in the way like a Golf GTI is easy yeah. to chuck around. It's still, you're still getting exactly the same from it. It's less spiky.
Yeah.
It's probably a good description of it, but it's just great. It's just a kit that works really, really well.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the road side of it, because that was something I think Maz had said, he'd had his GT3 done, just suspension and stuff,
yeah.
Before he then got the GT2. And he was like, yeah, but it's just better. Like, screw the track stuff. It's just better. Yeah. Like, day to day, it's whatever, more compliant, deals with stuff. Because I definitely had this belief a while ago, not so much recently, that like a stiff car was a sporty car.
Yeah.
Now I'm so far the other way. I'm like, I love compliance. And ultimately, if you can keep the wheels on the ground. What are the most popular kind of upgrades and things that people generally do now?
On the newer stuff, we do a lot of suspension kits, a lot of Manti kits. So we've done 8 full conversions on cars, but we do a lot more suspension kits only. And because they're still Porsche warranted, so you can put a Manti suspension kit on your 2RS, 3RS, and it doesn't affect your warranty at all, that's really cool. I mean, it did make them significantly more expensive than when we buy them totally from Manti, but the Porsche warranty, there's no warranty better.
Yeah.
It's such a great warranty. You know, they properly look after their cars. Yeah. Their warranty.
Yeah, they really do. And it's... I had an issue with my RS. It was a weird, like, clicking noise that was coming from the front. And I think it was some sort of joint-related thing. And went back to Porsche, and they were like, okay, we're probably going to have to change a bunch of stuff. Have you done some track days? I'm like, yeah, I have. They're like, okay, how many? I was like, well, I've probably done, like, 2 a year, 3 a year. They're like, okay, that's fine. Whereas, like, so many brands would just be like, so it's been on track? Yeah, no.
Well, yeah, but there's an issue you can go, well, hang on a minute. You sold me a car with a roll cage and harnesses in it.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's, if that's not for track, what are you saying?
Well, there's...
So, but they do, you know, as long as... The thing is, like, most things in life, if you're straight with people, you're straight back. And it's like, you know, we take cars on behalf of clients to one of the Porsche centres we work closely with and... You know, say, look, it's been on track. This is what's happened. They're like, okay, cool. And they go to Porsche with the warranty info.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, they approve it. You know, engines have been changed. They just do it. And that's another great why people love the brand. You know, it's the dealer network is behind it in that way.
That's it. I think that got me in from early days of like doing road trips with mates and stuff. And like, the Porsche just worked.
Yeah.
And I just didn't really have any problems. No. Lots of other manufacturers are very good now, but that sticks. When you're like, I'm aiming to drive 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day for a week, and you have no issues, and you're driving like probably a bit faster than you should, you're like, oh, I like this. I like this brand. You've done a few things on things like GT4s and Spiders.
Yeah.
You do, I guess there's like a Manti kit, but then there's a few different things.
So, yeah, we've got our GT4 that we've done the full Manti kit on, but we've also put ST brakes on it, which are the carbon ceramic.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they're a really good PCCB replacement. What we tend to do is, because they're kind of half the price of PCCB replacements, is we tend to, a lot of people put them on as like an insurance policy for their, everybody wants to buy a GT car with its original PCCBs on it.
Yeah.
Ideally, that hasn't been on track.
Yeah.
Good luck finding one that hasn't been on track.
You'll find ones that they say hasn't been on track.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of them. Yeah. That's because what they've done is they've taken off the PCCBs, put the STs on to use it on track, and then they put the PCCBs back on to sell it. But it's good insurance policy because the STs are a lot harder wearing.
They'll and that's surface transforms, right?
Yeah. They'll take a lot more abuse than the PCCBs. I mean, the PCCBs are a great break, but the STs just will just take the abuse. So it's like an insurance policy for you.
Mm. I would definitely can. Well, no, because if I bought a new car, it would have the new whatever's on it. And if I got like my RS, the ceramics sort of need doing. The fronts definitely need doing. The rears are like not far behind. Body traction control, just like.
Yeah,
that'll learn some lessons, but it does just like eat the rears.
STs are good though. You get those for that car.
Yeah.
We fit quite a few sets on Gen 2 997s.
Because a standard set of PCCBs is like.
Starts
two and a half or a quarter? No. More?
Yeah, they're more than that. I think they're like 20 grand.
Is it 20 for a full set? It's something like that, isn't it?
It's about twice the price of STs, and STs are about 12.
Yeah.
So.
And those you can refurb a bunch of times.
They can be refaced twice. We had a client's car here. He had a Mantai 4.2 he'd built a 997 Gen 2.
Was that a blue car?
Yeah. It had, we did a full refresh on that car.
Mm.
And we sent the shocks back to KW for an overhaul.
Yeah.
And they'd been on there, done a lot of track days, and he lets pro drivers drive his car. So it's been driven hard.
Yeah.
And they said, I said, can you refurb them? And they said, this car looks like it's done two seasons of VLN. The shocks are absolutely shot. What we'd like, because he's used it, and this is KW, what a great company. They said, we'd like to give you the newest version of this kit, full brand new kit, and we'll keep this for R&D, and you can have that at the cost of a refurb.
Nice.
So that was great. We also sent the ST brakes away for refacing, and the fronts were okay. The only problem with the rears was some of the bolts gone in the bells, so they'd corroded just from age. So they refaced the rears and put new bells on, and it was, wow. So this, but yeah, and we did a load of other bits on the car, like some other suspension bits and pieces. But
what sort of age do things start needing to be replaced? I guess it's entirely down to usage. Like, so my RS is now coming up to 40,000 miles.
Yeah.
It really probably needs a full set of discs. I was slightly tempted to just buy some PCBs and then it's within warranty and whatever, but like, I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm like, well, how long am I going to keep it in warranty? And like, I'm not going to do that forever.
What can you do? I mean, is it 15 years you can have them in warranty?
I don't know. Just keep going. I just bought a 3-year warranty like a year ago.
So what year is your car?
It's a 2011 model, but it's 2010.
That'll probably be the last time you can warranty it. I'm pretty sure it's 15 years.
Yeah.
And then you're out. So then you're on your own. So, I mean, at 40,000 miles, I mean, they're pretty bomb-proof, those 997s, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're using it a lot, yeah, suspension bushes and stuff wear out, but they don't wear... Because the thing is with the GT cars, is because they generally go out in nice weather, do track days, and then they go back and get put back away. They're not used all year round, so a lot of stuff that kills these cars is the winter.
Yeah.
Salt on the roads and... And just getting in and eating the bushes. But generally on a lot of the sort of standard road cars, we're sitting like 60,000 miles, you want to be looking at doing a lot of the suspension.
Mm.
But on the track stuff, you'd sort of deal with it as and when.
Yeah.
Sometimes it depends how you drive them hard on track. If you're bouncing all over the curbs.
Yeah, you can smash stuff up. It's an interesting, with suspension. So you've recently done this is an interesting topic actually. You've put back seats in a GT3.
Yes.
Was that do you now offer that as a service?
Yeah, we've done two cars now. Yeah. So we one for our mutual friend. It wasn't as straightforward as it first appeared. I mean, the brackets we get from a company in Germany, so they're all TÜV approved, which, as you know, TÜV.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you hear about TÜV, it like takes a year to get anything approved, and it's like an MOT strict level times 10. But yeah, the TÜV approved, and they're for 991 and 992 GT3s.
Nice.
So yeah, so we bought, I mean, the kit, it's not cheap to do the whole conversion, but by the time, so you bought the bracket kit and then you buy all the interior stuff and then you have it, you can't order the interior in the same trim as a GT3 because the GT3 is a specific.
Right.
So you then have to have the seat retrimmed to match. And then if you've got a cage car, panels are different. And if it's a non-cage, so because we did a touring conversion as well to the standard GT3. So really, if you bought, I know, if you wanted a 991 GT3 touring, and there, well, there weren't many made, were there? So they're big premium. You can buy a 991 GT3 and for sort of 10 grand, we can convert it to a touring. And then for about another 10 or 12 grand, you can put rear seats in it. Mm. And then you've got the ultimate 911.
Yeah.
A GT3 touring with rear seats.
Yeah.
I don't know why Porsche don't do it.
I don't know why they don't do it. They don't have to.
That's what sells like GTSs and turbos and things.
Yeah, if they literally, imagine Porsche just made a GT3 and you could have one with a spoiler without back seats.
Imagine if that Touring, when it had come out, like the new Touring, and actually 991.2 and 992, they are the same suspension as Wing,
yeah,
I believe.
Pretty much, yeah. There's not a lot of difference between them.
So they're pretty similar.
Yeah, they're similar enough that you can swap bits over.
No, sorry. I don't mean as in between the generations. I mean 991.2 wing car versus touring car and 992 wing car versus touring car.
Yeah.
They run the same suspension, same spring rates, same everything, don't they?
Yeah.
So why... And it's fine. But like, I feel like there's a lot of people that would go, yeah, but if that car came with seats... And this, we're diving down a real sort of niche for some people, but for so many people, I think this is such a no-brainer. Like, if you could get that car with seats in the back and it was slightly, it was more compliant on the road, everyone would be like, that's freaking amazing.
That's the one. So that's where you need to get that and then put a KW Mantoi kit on it. So you need a KW Mantoi kit, rear seats, rear wing delete, perfect car.
It's definitely, is it interesting? What's your favourite of the, do you have a favourite era?
No, I don't really. I just, like, some of my great memories of cars were, like, obviously growing up, sitting in the back of a 911, got a brother and sister, so they were either side and I'd be in the middle. This is obviously when seatbelts were compulsory, or I don't think it even had seatbelts. But, like, when I worked for Tony, I was doing restoration, and there was a 27R. I came back from lunch and it's a 27RS outside. So what's that for? He goes, that's your next job. I want you to take it for a drive. And when you get to 6,000 in second gear, you'll find God. And he just gave me the keys and I was like, cool. And I mean, they weren't worth loads of money then.
Yeah.
They are now. But as a right-hand drive, white with blue, limited slip diff. And I just went off for a drive in it. And I was gone so long, he was going to... You know, it's called the police. I came back and I was just like, wow, that was that age to drive that car with that permission, just go out and have it. And the value wasn't in them, so I did. And that was pretty epic.
Yeah.
We did more recently, we did a 959, did a full engine build on a 959. And taking that out for a drive, like, so Chris, who trained me, he'd done most of the work on the car, not build the engine up, Dave, but Chris did all the other work on the car. Like, we did all the shocks and steering rack and got all the brakes working again and stuff. They went out for driving that, and I drove it through Tring, which is just down the road, which is the town I grew up in, where I had a poster of that car on my wall. And now I'm driving through the town. I turned to Chris and went, mate, do you realise I grew up here, poster of this car on my wall, and I'm driving through the town with the man who taught me to fix cars? And he said, shut up. But that was quite a moment. That was pretty cool. Yeah, it was really cool. So that was my poster car. And then, I mean, some of the track stuff I've been fortunate to do and drive some of these cars on track is the GT3 RSs and stuff. I've got a 996 GT3, which I'd love. They're all, I know why people collect cars.
Yeah.
Because you just go, I want that one, I want that one, I want that one. And you drive them all. They're just brilliant.
I can totally see that. I looked at I've been through so, and I'm sure this journey will continue for many, many years to come, but I always looked at collections and gone, I don't really see the point, just like have a car and drive it. And then now I'm like, yeah, okay. And then you go, I want a massive, I would probably want a variety of experiences. In the, and then I'm kind of like, yeah, but I would really like a 991.2 GT3 Touring, keep my 997.2 RS, have a 996 RS, and then a 2.7 RS. Like,
there's a theme.
There's a theme there. I would very, very happily have a collection of the different eras of Porsches.
Yeah, and the RSs are just, you know, they always drive so different from their counterpart, even though there's, you know, even a 964 RS, which isn't that different to a 964 on paper, but when you get in, it's a totally different driving experience.
Says and, the Porsche nuts.
Yeah, the 27 RS, you know, they're just all, if it's got an RS badge on it.
Yeah, I think for me specifically also, it's like, I'm very much interested in the eras that I kind of remember. I'm interested in the older ones, but, and from an experience point of view and stuff, I'd love an early car. But I remember specifically 996. My first experience in a sports car was my cousin had a 996 GT3 way back. And we took me on a track day around Silverstone, and it was like the best thing ever. Yeah. And then went quite fast on the way home. And that was very formative at the time. I think I was, must have been like 16 or something. And then 997, I remember I had my 97, 991s, I've like driven them all, 992. Like, I have a real thing of like, and I get in my 991 and I'm like, oh, this kind of feels like a little bit vintage now because I've been in a 992. Yeah. And they're all like different.
We did that Evo feature a few years ago where we had the 996 1 and 2 and the 997 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. It was when the 997 2 had just come out.
Yeah.
We went and did a track day at Bedford in them, and driving all the cars one after, you could feel the evolution of,
you know,
if you were blindfolded, you could have put them in order. Yeah. You know, it's that evolution. It just feels a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. But they just, I don't know, Porsche just do it so well.
They do. Before I bought my RS, I went and did a experience day at Porsche Silverstone.
Yeah,
it was the only way I could think of getting to drive one before I bought one. And I drove 997 Gen 1, which had no aircon in it, 997 Gen 2, and 4 litre in one like couple of hour session.
All RSs.
And that was awesome. And the 4 litre was mega. I'm very happy I've got a 3.8. And I think it's a road car. No, I would totally have a 4 litre, absolutely. I remember noticing, oh shit, this engine's different in the 4 litre. Like the punch.
Yeah.
It just had so much more punch.
Yeah.
You've had a few cars through that have had been bought out, haven't you? So you had that one that was the 4.2.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those. We look after a couple of those for clients with the 4.2, and that is the first time I drove one. One of the guys didn't tell me. I just sort of see. And I went out and drove it, and I was like, "Can you take it for a good run?" Because we've done all this work on it. What we've done now, anyway. There's a route I take, and I get up to the bypass, and it's like, fucking hell. I said, that's got some face. It's a Manti 4.2. I like that. So, you know, it is like you said, the noticeable with the 4 litre to the 3.8, the 4.2 is again.
Not there.
Yeah.
And the character of that engine, is it similar and more, or is it quite like different?
It's the low down torque I initially noticed, but it's everywhere. So you get the low down torque and then you get the high up power. So it initially pulls off quicker and warm it up, get through the lanes and then get out to the bit of bypass. And then you open it up and you're like, bloody hell, this thing really pulls. And then come back and say, that's a good one, isn't it? It's 4 points. All right. So it's not like I'm driving a 4 litre in this car. I'm driving a 3.8 that's gone to a 4.2.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a big difference.
And that's like, I don't know. Is it like plus 100 foot-pounds of torque or something?
I've got power graphs. So it's just, it just feels, but it's noticeable. Noticeable, yeah. Definitely.
It's one I've always wanted to drive, that Sharkworks one, the 4.1 one. I didn't even know that Manti did the 4.2s at all. Just sort of see them for sale every now and then. I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah, they do. I think they do a 4.4 as well. I mean, these are all the Metzger-based bottom ends, aren't they? Which, yeah, they're just bomb-proof.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason they ever go wrong is because they're either badly built, you know, people don't get compression ratios right, or they're not mapped properly. But that's the only ones we ever see go wrong, come out of cup cars that have been built badly.
Yeah. If it didn't cost what it costs, and if those cars weren't kind of going up and up, I totally would buy an engine and do it and put it in. Just like, I'm sure it'd be fun. But actually less so, I'm less interested in that now than I was 5 years ago. So I'm like, whatever. It's plenty fast enough.
Yeah, there's something nice about keeping them original. There's also something nice about them. You want the other engine, so you can go, right, I'm just going to take my original engine out and put it there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put this 4.2 monster in it.
Yeah.
And use it for a bit. And then if ever I come to sell it, I can switch it back. But then you've got to go, well, the car's done this mileage, but the engine's only done this because I had this other engine. And then people would go, what? Oh, I don't get it.
When do these cars get to a point? Because let's say you're buying a 2.7 RS. And, like, they've all done loads of miles. So, like, that's just where they're at.
Well, yeah, there's, like, with the 2.7 RS, you know, they've all been, smashed up, raced.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how many original ones are left, but there's probably not many.
And back then, people raced them.
Well, they weren't worth anything, were they? So it was a race. It was a good value race car, reliable, you know, and then people put turbo arches on them or forward dated them, because then it was all... it's all back date, forward date. What date is it?
Do you think we'll get with... Oh, this is an interesting slight debate I've got. I'm not going to do it. But with my SC. When I bought that, SCs were worth, like, nothing. And I didn't do the work on it. And everyone wanted back date. But I feel like we're starting to get to the point where people will want non-backdated cars. And an SC will become worth more than my backdated car. We can't be too far off, I think, that.
I've been saying this for a long time. Because backdates have been... How long have people been backdating for? People were backdating stuff, obviously, before Singer came along, and that's got to be, 8 years ago they came out with that first one. And people have been backdating for quite a long time before that. It looks cool, and people love the early cars. So I don't know. I guess it would be critical mass when you go to the ad. Everything you want to buy a 3.2 Carrera, and there's nothing but backdated cars. Yeah. You'll be like, maybe that's when. No, but where's all the stuff gone? All the bumpers, all those impact bumper sets that have been thrown away, and
probably worth quite a lot.
All the stuff people take off and throw away.
Yeah, it'll be worth loads down the line. Another way of adding punch, and these cars have had a lot of, I'd say, flack for this. Things like the GT4 and pretty much any Boxster with the six cylinders in it. Got really long gearing.
Yeah.
So one of the things you guys do is you put shorter gearing in.
Yeah, so we change the crown wheel and pinion. So it drops the whole gearing by about 14%. So... it works really well. I mean, it gives it that, makes the car feel so much more alive on the road.
Yeah.
It's a lot more punchy. It does, you know, 981, they're all the same gearbox. So 981s, all the GT4s, the Spiders, the Boxsters. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, did the Spider change? Is this 981 and 718 Spider? Was one a GT car and one not a GT car?
Yeah. So the 718 is... the GT4 underneath, basically.
Yeah.
But the 981 wasn't. Not all cars look good with the roof up and down, but that does.
They're cool.
Yeah, really cool.
I would quite like, I really like the, I say original, I do not mean original, like the Boxster Spider, what was that?
987. Yeah, so he did that in the Cayman R.
Cayman R is like slightly, I had one as a loan for a weekend. I loved it. Like, it was awesome at the time. That was when I had a 981 Boxster.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a Cayman R for the weekend. I remember thinking they looked weird. Like, just that whole shape, that era at the time looked a bit odd.
Well, anyway, they, I mean, those Cayman R's have held their money well.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like 200 or something.
A lot.
And 100 a manual, 100 a PDK. And then how many had buckets and spider wheels and
yeah.
and spec everybody wants and then the right colour and just filters out. There's only a handful of them that are...
Yeah, and same with the spiders. Like that. I think they're cool. I really like all the spiders, actually. I'm going through a real, like, I need a convertible thing at the moment. Driven a few convertibles recently and just like, oh, the experience.
If you need a convertible, you've got to go for a... You've got to go for a spider, haven't you, really?
Got to go for a spider, and I think it has to have short gearing. Yeah.
It was designed to be a convertible in the first place.
If you can only have one 911.
One 911. To rule them all.
To rule them all. What would you go for?
I mean, right now, I'd probably have to, you know, if I could even get one, it'd be a 992 RS. Because just to get hold of one of them and be using that and tracking that and outing that would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be mega. It's not going to happen. So in the realistic, I mean, I had a 991.2 manual, which I loved that car. That was a brilliant car.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good on track, great on the road, fast as you'll ever need. But the only thing when I got to the track, I wish it was PDK.
Yeah.
But every other time I loved it being manual. So that was pretty cool. But then, you know, like 997.2 RS, that little one we got down there, that'd be, I couldn't ever pick.
So I normally wrap these up with five questions. Do you have a most memorable driving trip or journey?
Yes. I did a Carrera GT driving trip this year.
Ooh.
So I've got a client we look after a few Carrera GTs.
Mm.
I've got a client, I've got to know him. Obviously, when you look after cars like that, you really get to know people because they love their cars, I love their cars. And, you know, so you just tend to, you end up exchanging WhatsApp messages talking about Carrera GTs and stuff. Anyway, he said to me, Ollie, I've booked this road trip down through the Pyrenees. He's got a few other cars. He goes, I want to take the Carrera GT, but I don't trust any of my mates to drive it with me. Do you want to come and share the driving? Yep. absolutely no hesitation at all. It was just like, yep. And then I said to the wife, I've been invited on this trip to drive this Carrera. And she said, well, you can't say no to that, can you? I said, good, because I already said yes. That was happening. No, that was non-negotiable. There's certain things in your life when you just, you ask for forgiveness, not permission. And that was, I'm going. We'll talk about it later. But she was fully on board with it. So, because she knew that was like, I mean, that was it was an absolutely brilliant drive. Like that car, we put the KW suspension on it and it's also got an Inconel exhaust system on it. And it just... That V10 sound is just... And driving that car, and Chris, who owns it, he's such a lovely guy. He's really chilled out. So he was like, yeah, okay. He just let me drive it. You know, he didn't question me about it or anything. And he did say, you probably drive this 10 to 20% faster than I do. I said, don't worry, I'm not about to sling it off the side of the mountain here because I want to make it too. But that was really cool. I mean, those cars, you know, and to drive them and to drive it fast, it almost gets smaller. Because they're a big car, right? And they're quite nervous. You know, manoeuvring them around is horrible. You know, driving them out of the workshop because they've got the anti-stall and you don't want to buzz the clutch on them or anything. So you just, manoeuvring them around is quite horrible. You get them out on the open road and you start to wind them up and everything comes into itself. They're just beautiful.
That's it. Like a really good cars do that, don't they? It doesn't like kind of matter what size they are. They just kind of shrink and you're just, everything works. Everything does what you expect it to do. And then you can just drive as fast or as slow as you want, can't you?
That car to get like, because it's got the tiny clutch, the revs drop off so quick. So to get even like the downshift, heel and toe downshifts to get them right and even getting an upshift because they're not the quickest box, but the revs drop off so quick. So you kind of, you got to almost buzz them on the way up as well. They're just epic car. It's the best, but they'll never make anything like that again. That would be, if I could have any car, that would be, that would be it.
As these cars get older, presumably there's actually a certain amount of mileage that you kind of want it to have done.
Yeah, so when you see these like delivery mileage stuff that's really quite old, you know you're going to be
full restoration,
looking at loads of problems with them. Even if they've been dry stored, you know, it's they start to leak oil and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think you want to be doing, you want to be 100 miles a month in a car as a minimum. Yeah. So 1,000 miles, 1,200 miles a year on a car is not really going to devalue it much, is it? But it keeps everything just working right. You know, a lot of, so the 959s that we do maintenance on, a lot of the problems you get with them is because they don't get used. So the one we did the engine build on, when it came in for a service and it actually leaked oil onto the exhaust system whilst it was on the ramp and caught fire. I mean, luckily it didn't happen when the guy drove it down here.
Yeah.
And so we put it out and said, look, we're going to have to pull this engine out. And then he said, well, there's some other bits and pieces, and we put it all back together. And because the car lives in storage, I said to the, look, you need to use it because then we can work out what's going on with these other little electrical gremlins. And it's been used all this summer. So it's been out to quite a few car shows and, and stuff. And everything works. It's all just come back to life. All the electrical gremlins have gone. And, you know, we sorted out a couple of bits, but nothing. If you've been faced with that list and it had come in and said, fix this, you would never have fixed it because it hadn't been used.
Yeah.
So just using the car with those little niggles, they've, it's just worked itself out and fixed it. And that's often the problem. You, how do you fix a problem on a car because it's there because it hasn't been used if you're not going to use it? There's no point. That's what I said. If you're not going to use it, there's no point. We might as well just leave them.
If you could only drive one car for the rest of your life.
When I think back over the stuff I've driven, like that Carrera GT drive was epic. But if you had to live with something every day from a practicality point of view and a fun point of view and just being really cool point of view.
Yeah.
Maybe a 27 RS will probably be in there because it's such an iconic car. It's also that understated thing where people look at it and just think it's probably think it's a 3T with like wheels and graphics on it.
They don't even know what that is. It's just an old Porsche.
Yeah, it's just, well, a 27 RS is a bit like AC Cobras, aren't they? When you see one, you go, it's probably not a real one.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of those would be up there. Because it's just from a fun point of view and it's there's just nothing to go wrong on it and it costs you buttons to maintain it.
Yeah.
But right up to, like I said earlier, my 991.2 GT3 manual, that was really cool. Had enough modern stuff on it.
Yeah. A real, like, usable in the modern world. Yeah. I mean, all of these things, they're all got an engine, four wheels and whatever, but
as long as you've got a cigarette lighter to charge your phone, you can just click it on your screen. You've got Waze, you've got, got your podcast on there, got your radio come through, put your earbuds in. So you don't even need all that tech in cars now.
No.
So if, you know, that to run a 27 RS as a daily forever, that would be really cool.
That would be super cool. Yeah. And yeah, you just need like a Bluetooth connection to something.
Yeah, job done.
What do you think is the most undervalued car at the moment? What should be worth more?
I've always thought that 99 have come up recently. Everything's come up recently, hasn't it? I haven't looked at the price of stuff recently, to be honest. I always thought 996.1 GT3s were cheap.
Yeah.
But I don't think they are anymore.
What are they? 50, 60?
I think they're more than that now. I think they were, when you see them for like high 40s, 50, because they're the first of, I know, it's still a GT3 and it's still the first. Like, for example, I remember when like all these, the short wheelbase 911 Cup cars now that are run, they were, nobody wanted those years ago. You don't want a short wheelbase one. They don't, you want a long wheelbase one and they were for nothing.
Yeah.
And then there's a race series and now they're what, a quarter of a million quid?
Yeah.
And I think the 996 GT3.1 is because it's that motorsport first built, first of its era. They've always looked like good value to me from a collector point of view.
Yeah.
Because there's 100 and just over 100 right-hand drive cars.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, they're rare. They're really rare.
And I think a lot of the, now they're absolutely in the point where you don't expect them to be the latest, greatest thing.
You buy a 964 for the same money.
Yeah.
and it needs completely restoring.
Yeah,
you can buy a 996 GT3 and great. A lot of that stuff crosses over to Boxsters, and maybe that's partly why, because a lot of the crossover parts are the same, but I mean, secondhand parts supply is easy. But this is what it was like years of 964s. You know, you pick up I paid $3,500 for a 964 with a knocking big end. You know, I used to have engines and gearboxes lying around, used to break them up. So I'd just parts galore. And it was cheap, you know, and you could maintain your car cheap like that. And I think 996s are kind of in that era. And because the GT3, a lot of the parts are the same, similar like the 964 RS. And the way Porsche have always done it, everything sort of fits, doesn't it?
Fits and works and whatnot.
But yeah, everything else is, I don't know, it's unusual time at the moment, isn't it, for values?
I find it really difficult to buy something right now because I'm like, surely there's going to be some sort of correction.
But everybody says that.
Rare stuff,
yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, the stuff always goes, it does always go up and down, but generally it goes up to more than it was before.
Yeah.
So as long as you're not buying them to make money on,
yeah,
you're just buying the car because it's the car you want.
Yeah.
So I did see a show earlier this year, which really caught my eye. I thought it was really cool, is somebody had done it was an old 2.5 Boxster, and they'd made it look a bit like the car, the launch car, you know, they did at the motor show with the sort of cut one wheels that were gold in the middle.
Right.
So the silver with terracotta, amber lights, just looked like that when they launched it 25 years ago, the concept car one.
Yeah.
And they'd put, so they like a three-piece cut one wheel with the studs around the bolts around the outside and gold centre wheels, and but it just looked really clean.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite cool.
And it's the, like, where's the value? I'm definitely, if I'm like looking at the value in the range of stuff, it's like something like a 996 GT3. It's nowhere near, I never thought they were like horrific to look at ever, really. But I look at them now and go like, that seems like lots of value. And same with things like the Boxsters and all that sort of stuff. Like, it seems like just really good value.
They always, all these things do full circle, right? And as human beings, we don't seem to learn that.
Yeah.
It just goes round and round. Yeah. Just start, because it'll get to the point where it's, all the cheap ones will have gone from the market because they've been broken up for parts or scrapped or whatever.
What's the most interesting car to you at the moment? What are you sort of Googling, looking up?
Probably, I mean, the 992 GT3 RS, quite looking forward to getting a proper look over that. Got a client who's got a DLS coming.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to having a look over that. But yeah, just sort of anything Porsche then, really.
Yeah. Whatever's the latest, greatest thing popping out. Because I guess, you know, in not too long, one of them will turn up here.
Yeah, we've got, I mean, I don't know who's actually got a confirmed order on an RS yet.
I don't think anyone, maybe now they do, but they didn't about a week ago, no one. Yeah. I don't think anyone had one.
Yeah, so I don't know, we'll see. I know we've got a few clients who've said they're getting them, but they said we haven't had orders confirmed. So
yeah.
I don't know when delivery, is it first quarter next year is delivery?
Oh, that sounds about right. Yeah. I know, I believe allocations, the rumour I've been hearing is allocations have been done by Porsche or like have to slightly go through Porsche for the RS, which is why lots of people don't know that they think they're getting one, but they're like, I don't know. Which would be, I'm just looking forward to seeing them out and about and banging around. I'd like to see one on the road.
Yeah.
Just, you know, just parked outside a coffee shop or something.
Have you specced yours up online?
No. I've specced, I have a GTS on order.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm ever going to get it. So I ordered it in February.
Right.
And production ends pretty soon. Because 992.2 is coming.
Yeah.
So I really think it may not ever turn up, which is kind of annoying.
Do they stay in touch about that, or are you chasing them, or how's that?
It's somewhere in the middle.
Have they told you it's coming, or?
They're like, we have, because they don't, they get a certain number of allocations sort of come through, and they're like, oh, we've got another GTS, right. Next person on the list, this is your car.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So I haven't been allocated like a specific car or anything yet. They're just
you're working your way.
And they're like, well, you know, we know the 911T is coming out. If you want to sort of move your slot into one of them, I was like, I'll have a think about it. But I drove a GTS, a 992. I really like it. Like, it felt like a bit more special than a 991 GTS. And it sounds a bit better, whatever, blah, 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 all the stuff. And I was like, yeah, but I want that car.
That's what I want, the one I signed up for.
You're like, well, you might be able to get a 992, one of the early 992.2 Carrera S's. I'm like, yeah, but that's a different car.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I don't want that one.
I want that one.
How about you just give me a GT3, yeah? Give me a GT3. Yeah. Anyway. Not one to moan about. Five-car garage, unlimited value.
Carrera GT. 27 RS.
Just to go. It's got to fit into your life, so if you've got a daily or whatever.
I've got to bung my daily in there.
If one of these is not your daily.
Okay, Carrera GT, 27 RS. 964 38 RSR.
Mm.
Yeah, that'd be cool. 992 GT3 RS.
Yeah.
Oh, so do I have a convert? I've got a convertible. So I've got the Carrera GT, covers a lot of bases.
You've not got anything like...
with back seats?
With back seats? Yeah.
Yeah, I've got nothing back seats, have I? Well, yeah, that's not going to be very helpful. Something with back seats. Maybe a KN turbo coupe.
Yeah.
They look quite cool. I saw one the other day at a Porsche centre with...
Yeah.
It was in crayon with... like ceramics and mega spec on it. It's like, oh, that looks cool.
Right, cool. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.